brutally, who was abused, who was tortured, not just at CIA black sites, but at Guantanamo as well. So many of them have awful stories to tell if we're willing to listen. This was a massive problem, and Mr. al-Nashiri is a really important example of what happens when we fail to uphold the principles our country is supposed to live
Roy
by.
Roy Idelson, we want to thank you so much for being with us. His new book out today, Doing Harm, How the World's Largest Psychological Association Lost Its Way in the World.
As a pedestrian, you see headlights, but that doesn't mean the driver sees you. When walking at dawn, dusk, or after dark, make sure to be seen by oncoming traffic. Walk facing traffic. Wear light-colored, light-reflective clothing. Carry a bright light so drivers can see you. Use crosswalks. See and be seen. Pedestrian safety. It's no accident.
It certainly is not. And it's no accident also, hopefully, that you're tuning in to WUSB Stony Brook. We're located at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as on the internet at WUSB.FM. The time is 6 o'clock. The day is Tuesday. And that means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
Is it hot enough for you, Kyle?
Generally, yeah, it's definitely just right.
Yeah, we're in the middle of a, I guess, a post-summer heat wave. Even though technically it's still summer, I don't really buy into this whole thing of, you know, Labor Day happens and summer is over. Why? Why does summer have to end after Labor Day? Who told you that? You know, technically, according to the cosmos, we're still in summer until at least, what, the 20th, 21st of September? So there's a couple of weeks right there. Why the eagerness? You know, things are closing. You can't get lobster rolls in certain places anymore. You can't go swimming in certain places. It's like an eagerness. Eagerness to just stop having fun. Not that you can't have fun in the autumn. There's all kinds of things you can do in the autumn. You can, you know, pick pumpkins or whatever people do. But I guess it's a milestone. We're in September. We warned people this would happen last week, and here we are.
Yeah, and it's lingering. The heat is staying with us. And I guess the average person will tell you the weather changes quite a bit. So here we are on the warmer side of that change. And your expectations for what autumn should immediately be are being shattered by this. I know water temperatures are very warm. There's all kinds of unusual events going on. But this is certainly what would have been the dog days of summer episode, but it's extended dog days.
Our Congressman Nick Pelota, a real work of art, this guy, he's proposing that because of global warming, we expand summer into October officially. Oh, come on, it's believable.
That's really believable.
It is believable. It's totally believable. You know, I could make up all kinds of things that Republicans are coming up with. And half of them will be complete fabrications, but they will still be believable because of the craziness of the things they are actually saying in real life. So,
that bunch.
You know what? Look it up. Look it up. Maybe Nick Pelota said that. Maybe he didn't. But I'll bet he's thinking it. Yeah, let's you know what? The global warming's a good thing. We can, you know, finally have cruises go through the North Pole and, yeah, maybe do some drilling up there and also have more swimming time at the beaches and things like that. Yeah, it's called finding clouds in the sky. No, wait, it's golden linings in the clouds. It's, what's the phrase?
Silver.
Silver linings. Why are they silver linings? Why aren't they gold?
I believe that's how they appear.
Yeah, but gold is more valuable than silver. Right? That would be a better find.
I think it resembles silver, the metal, but I don't know the value is an important part as so much as the characteristic of what positive aspect might be beyond a cloud.
Literally talking about clouds in the sky right now. That's
magic.
Where we are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's you know, we spend a lot of time outdoors, and it's quite pleasant here on Long Island. There's all kinds of things to do.
Well, and a lot of those political creatures are going back to school, and a lot of people are indoors. So it's an exception if you can get your last minute vacation or a little bit of time, but spend as much time as you can outdoors if you can stand it. But it requires precautions, really. I mean, you have to still be worried about a lot of bugs.
If you can't stand the heat, get off the planet.
Mm. Yeah,
that's what the bumper sticker says now.
Sage words there. The bumper sticker suggestion hour here at WUSB Stony Brook.
So we're going to talk about sports because that's what we do here on the program sometimes. There are sports going on all over, you know?
Did you know there's a volleyball game that you play with your feet?
Well,
it's called foot volley.
Well, first of all, you can make a sport do anything you want.
I'm convinced they're making up sports now.
How about this? What if you had soccer, okay, but you were allowed to use your hands? What kind of a game would that be? I mean, you know, we all assume, yeah, you're not supposed to use your hands, but what if you were? What would you call that? You know, you're kicking the ball. Maybe you don't use your hands a lot. You can't throw the ball. How about that? But you can bat the ball. You can. I just think, you know, it's. Did we ever try it? Is my question.
Sounds like I'm imagining basketball, but no basket.
There's no basket.
Yeah.
There's no basket. And you can't. You can't take a shot with your hands, with your arms. You can't do that.
Okay.
And you can't pass the ball, but you can, you know, like I said, bat the ball or you know, protect yourself from being hit by the ball.
But we'll revise that. We'll go back and draw up some rules.
It's just I see people being called for handball so much when they weren't really intentionally doing that. Like someone kicks the ball and you know, a quarter of a second later it hits their you know, forearm. They didn't have time to retract it. So, I don't know. It seems kind of harsh sometimes. But, yeah, you can do that with all kinds of sports. Volleyball with feet? Yeah, why not? Why not?
It's amazing.
If you don't have arms, it's definitely a good idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, head. You know, they're using, like, headers or they have all these names for things. Like, they did a triple spiral or some kind of move.
I'm trying to remember. I was good at volleyball in high school, actually. But, unfortunately, there weren't many guys playing volleyball. So I kind of was shamed into stopping. But can you hit the ball with your head? I don't think you can, right? You're supposed to hit it with your hands?
Yeah. Well, in this game, you can, apparently.
Okay, so why not? Why can't you hit it with your head? That sounds like a great idea.
I think you would get something out of this. So what sport caught your eye?
No, well, you brought up volleyball, and that made me think of the game that was, I forget what state this was in, but it was in some state where 90,000 people showed up for a volleyball game.
How crazy is that?
I mean, that's more than any college football game, I think. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it definitely set the record for all women's sports, and that includes the World Cup when the World Cup was in the United States. So, wow. And you know, volleyball doesn't take up that much space, so they were able to fit a lot more people in there because, well, the volleyball court was basically a fraction of the size of the field, so they had more seats around there. And I mean, yeah, I'm not saying it's not exciting, but I just didn't think that many people would show up for a volleyball game. But boy, did they. Over 90,000.
I guess it was the thing that was really happening, and they had the capacity there. But great way to promote something and get people drawn and excited about it.
Uh-huh.
Something that wouldn't ordinarily have that kind of an audience.
Well, I mean, how do you find out about something? Like, I'm always trying to find out about these things. And I'm always finding out after everybody else seems to know about it, even things that I'm interested in. You know, finding out, oh, wow, it's a volleyball game. I'm not saying that that's something I would have really been that interested in, but just even knowing it was happening.
Where it was airing, regardless of the turnout, yeah, you have to kind of flip around. But there are so many sports channels on cable television and and sports. It's everywhere right now.
It really is.
I want to say that. It is dominating. And I think part of this, just stating the obvious here, is because of the writer's strike.
You think it's because of the writer's strike?
I think there's a lot more coverage of that because it doesn't take that kind of labor to produce.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, we've been told this. This is the horror story of programming that we were going to be running into.
Well, I guess sports, that's reality TV, isn't it? Technically, it's reality. It's happening.
That was the other thing that we were doomed to be subjected to, and it was, foretold. And that was, an argument for the studios. I mean,
absolutely. I mean,
how that's some really bad propaganda. But anyway. They tried to scare us into, sports and reality.
How do we get a strike to affect reality TV? You know, I want to see all reality TV shut down. You know, I want the Hollywood writers and directors and actors to all come back and to get a good deal. They deserve it. Reality TV, not so much. So what can we do? What can we do to trigger a strike that would knock them out of contention? That's just a dream of mine. Okay, but speaking of things that everybody else seems to know about that I find out later, even though I'm interested in, how long have I been talking about soccer on this show? I talk about the World Cup. I talk about the way things are designed, the leagues, the relegation, the promotion, international cooperation, all of that, and how the U.S. doesn't seem to really get it as much as everybody else. Of course, that has been improving a lot. MLS has really expanded over the years, But what I didn't know, what I did not know, and I should have known this, was that there is a competition involving Major League Soccer and a whole lot of other teams. Just like, you know, we talked about the FA Cup. We even followed a team through the FA Cup from the very lower rungs. I forget their name. Do you remember their name, the team we followed?
Nunnington Griff.
Nunnington Griff, that's right. We just picked the team at random, and they were like 12 divisions down. But theoretically, if they had kept winning games every time they met another team, they could have made it all the way to the top at Wembley Stadium playing Manchester United or somebody. It never happens, but it could happen. And that is the magic of it all. Of course, the first game, they lost, I think, 10-0, so they were out immediately. But I said at the time, and I've said many times since then, wouldn't it be cool to have a competition like that in this country? Turns out we do. We do. It's called the U.S. Open Cup. Yeah, the U.S. Open Cup. It's technically the entire name is the 2023 for this year, Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. It's a 108th edition of the U.S. Open Cup. 108 years? This has been going on for. It's a knockout domestic cup competition of American soccer. 99 teams participate. The first round takes place in March, and it has 28 what are known as open division teams. Second, I don't know what that is. Second round happens in April. You get 14 winners from the first round, and that makes sense because there were 28 teams, so there's 14 winners. Then you get 21 Division III teams. Yes, we have a Division III. Can't name a single team in Division III, but it exists. And we have 24 USLC teams. So that's now 73 teams that have entered. And that brings you to the second round in April.
I think open means maybe community teams and teams that are not semi-professional and clubs.
So we could start a team. WUSB could have a team.
I don't know what LC stands for.
Maybe we have some really athletic people on our station. I want you to know that.
Yeah.
We could have a team.
The sound system or something. Yeah.
Absolutely. We'll come up with a really cool name. That's for sure.
Yeah.
We'll bring our own music.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fully.
Third round, later in April, you have 30 winners from the second round and 18 Major League Soccer teams, 18 MLS teams. And now you have 91 teams that have entered. Then the round of 32 takes place in May, where you have 24 winners from the third round, four MLS teams competing in the CONCACAF Champions League. These are comprised of teams that have won in the past, and they're the big teams, the most successful teams. And you have four of the next best MLS teams. It goes on, and it finishes in late September. So that means we have a game coming up at the end of this month. That will determine U.S. Open, the other U.S. Open champion. And this is amazing. I'm still learning about this. I really am.
We're at the end of that tournament, sorry.
We're getting to the end.
Okay.
We're getting to the end. So
they've been competing. These 99 teams have been competing since March, and this is the upcoming final game of the Open Cup.
I want to do the same thing here and actually start following some of the lower rung teams beginning in March of next year. Maybe even go to some of the games. Maybe even, you know, stay at some of the players' houses because it's that small where you get to know the people. I mean, I don't even know about the tournament, let alone the lowest teams in the tournament. But that's the magic of soccer that the whole world seems to experience, and I guess we're experiencing it now too. I just don't understand how it could be the 108th edition of this.
You might end up being like the kit person.
I could play.
You could be like helping out on the sidelines.
I could be called in if necessary. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, how hard could it be? All right, moving on to the other U.S. Open. You might have heard about this. This is where they play tennis and bat the ball. It's like pickleball, but it's different than pickleball. This involves what's called a tennis ball and a lot more running. And for some reason, people take more of an interest in this sport.
Yeah, they play that over by this park I hang out in.
Uh-huh. Yeah. This doesn't really have much to do with with the game itself. It has to do with a fan on Tuesday morning, this morning. A fan was ejected from a U.S. Open tennis match early this morning after German player Alexander Zverev. How do you pronounce Z-V-E-R-E-V?
Oh, can I do it?
Try it.
Zverev?
The Z-V is what's tripping me up. The player, we'll just call him Alexander, complained the man used language from Adolf Hitler's Nazi regime. We can't escape this anywhere, can we? We really can't escape this.
Wait, what did that have to do with? Was this heckling?
I'll get to it. Alexander is the number 12 seed. He was serving at 2-2 in the fourth set of his match against number 6, Jannik Sinner, when he suddenly went to chair umpire James Kiathavang and pointed toward the fan who was sitting in a section behind the umpire. I like that you can figure out who the fan is. It's that small where you can point to an actual person. He just said the most famous Hitler phrase there is in this world, Alexander told the chair umpire. It's not acceptable. And then the umpire turned backward, asked the fan to identify himself, then asked fans to be respectful to both players. Then during the changeover, the fan was identified by spectators seated near him, and he was removed by security. A disparaging remark directed towards the players, said U.S. Tennis Association spokesman Chris Widmeyer. The fan was identified and escorted from the stadium. He started singing the anthem of Hitler that was back in the day with his Deutschland über alles. It was a bit too much, said the player. I think he was getting involved in the match for a long time. I don't mind it. I love it when fans are loud. I love when fans are emotional. But I think me being German and not really proud of that history, it's not really a great thing to do. And I think him sitting in one of the front rows, I think a lot of people heard it. So if I just don't react, I think it's bad for my side. So, it's tragic that that's what's happening in this country.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I think important to realize. I mean, the performer or the athlete, they're in that space, they're sharing that space, and for the player to hear it, how many people were around that person? How many people that probably, maybe a lot didn't understand it, but how many people around that person did understand it and didn't say anything or couldn't feel as though they were compelled to interrupt and all these like social niceties? And then, of course, it is pointed out and deservedly, and then disrupts everything as the attention is being called to it. So I think that's a good way to handle it, but it took presence of mind, I think, from the player to say, like, hold on now. And we've seen this, I think, a little bit with music lately, big festival season over the summer, and there's been a lot of little tussles here and there. You get little stories or some drama in the media.
Well, fans misbehaving.
Throwing stuff, yeah. But this is a whole other level.
When you inject Nazism into it, you know, that is a part of something else in this country that is happening. I mean, there were Nazis marching in Florida. Did you see this in the news?
No.
They were out on the street. It's not the first time either. They're out on the street. They've got swastika flags. You know, you almost think it's a joke. You almost think they're just playing some kind of part. And I don't know. Maybe they are, but it's not funny. And It's something that is becoming increasingly normal. You know, it's really disgusting.
Well, and tennis itself is a quiet sport. There's cameras all over there. So, I mean, this is definitely a stunt.
Well, yeah, okay. I don't know if it's a stunt. I don't know if it's a stunt or just an idiot or a full-fledged Nazi. I don't know. But the point is they're showing up all sorts of places.
All over.
On a main street in Florida. That is a big deal.
Yeah.
Just very recently on Twitter. In fact, it's ongoing right now. The Anti-Defamation League is being attacked by a bunch of white nationalists or white supremacists. Elon Musk being one of them. I'm sorry to have to say that, but this is a guy that is now targeting an anti-racism, anti-Semitic organization that is world-renowned for pointing out when anti-Semitism is rearing its ugly head, targeting Nazis, the kinds of things you're supposed to do. What does he do? He blames them. He blames them for his loss of advertising. It's bizarre. It is bizarre, but he's basically siding with all these ugly people. And all you have to do is follow the comments after one of his posts about the ADL, and you'll see they're not even trying to hide anymore. They're not even masking their anti-Semitism, basically blaming the Jews for everything and saying it's about time they were put in their place. I'm not even paraphrasing. Those are the actual words they use. And, Elon Musk lets that go by, but if ADL criticizes him, well, you're stepping out of line. And he's actually announced that he's going to be suing them. It's insane. It is insane. But I know a lot of people are very upset with Twitter lately. A lot of people have been leaving Twitter, and I understand why. I have my Mastodon account. I'm setting up accounts wherever there's a new social media presence. Maybe that will be the one that works better. But if you just leave Twitter, you're leaving Twitter to those people, and it's already a really, really big social network. It's very powerful. If you leave it to them, they become more powerful. Now, I like to say wherever there is Nazism, racism, all this kind of ugliness, there has to be resistance. There has to be a group of people who stay behind and fight and annoy the hell out of these people and make their lives miserable. You know, if you just give up, if you just walk away, they're still going to be there. They're going to get all the use of the platform. They're going to have all that power, all that visibility, and nobody pushing back. And that's not good. That's not something that we should be allowing in any sense. So, yeah, I'm on all kinds of platforms, but I'm staying behind and fighting the fight. Of course, you know, less and less people are around to agree, and more people are around to basically disagree. It doesn't have to be that way. All right, you know, it gets darker. It really gets darker. I can't believe some of these things. I thought this was a joke. I really thought this was a joke. This is in Florida. I know. It always goes down to Florida, doesn't it? Nazis marching in the street openly. Okay, there are some central Florida lawmakers who basically have said they are considering all legislative, legal, and executive options available to stop Nazis. No, I'm kidding. They don't care about that. No, they want to stop business owners from voluntarily displaying rainbow decals in their windows. Yeah, you didn't hear about this, did you, Carl? They actually want to force people not to have rainbows in their window. People who want to have rainbows in their shop windows. Four Republican lawmakers. Yeah, okay, it's only four? Only four now? It's going to grow.
They don't like it because it reminds them of their hatred.
Four Republican lawmakers wrote a letter to officials in a place called Mount Dora 2 weeks ago, warning that the new optional city-sponsored program could put the central Florida community outside Orlando in the crosshairs of potentially detrimental and absolutely unnecessary economic harm. Yeah, because if I follow this logic, if you have a rainbow in your shop window, all the racists and white supremacists are going to boycott your shop and maybe boycott the entire town. And we don't want that, do we? We need those white supremacists. We need those racists. We need the Nazis to come in and purchase things. Yeah, how dare you have a rainbow in your window? Don't you know the kind of harm that's going to cause by spreading the word of tolerance? Wow. The lawmakers cited boycotts of Bud Light and Target. Yeah, they looked at that as an example. And basically, those brands were promoting diversity and inclusion of the LGBTQ plus community. And because of that, because of the actions of those ugly people who saw promoting diversity as a threat to them somehow, well, now we're just not even going to allow people to show support for diversity. This is real. This is happening in Florida. Mount Dora City Council approved the Safe Place initiative last month. The city of 17,000 residents is known for its antique shops and weekend festivals. The mission of the Safe Place initiative is to provide the community with easily accessible safety information and safe places throughout the city they can turn to if they are the victims of an anti-LGBTQ+ or other hate crime. the city of Mount Dora said on its website. How dare they? How dare they? The council's decision to approve the program has coincided with an uptick in anti-LGBTQ plus incidents, including vandalism last month at two LGBTQ plus centers in Orlando. Democratic state lawmaker Anna Eskamani posted the Republican lawmaker's letter on social media, saying it might be the weirdest letter I've ever read, and I have to agree with that. Let LGBTQ plus people exist and stop politicizing everything, she said. This is disgusting. This is disgusting, but this is what's happening. And it's what's happening because we're not fighting back hard enough. You know, we laugh when we see Bud Light being targeted because they had a trans person in an ad or something. And, yeah, the beer sucks, but the issues are real. And we need to stand up and fight when that happens. All right. Voting. Voting is coming up this year, but mostly next year. And, of course, we've all heard about what's going on with Trump and his many trials. I came up with a headline. This is mine, by the way. I came up with this myself. I haven't seen it anywhere. I haven't been really looking at newspapers recently, so maybe it's shown up. But if it hasn't, I'm laying claim to it. All right? And if you use it, just, you know, give me credit. We're talking about Trump maybe having to be on trial during the election cycle, otherwise known as the campaign trail. Headline, trail or trial? Huh? That's good, right? That's really good. Because it's going to be a choice. Is he going to be on the trail or is he going to be in a trial?
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
I mean,
came to me in a dream.
That's really next level. Artful.
All right. but yeah, seriously, a panel of federal judges, this happened today as well, rejected Alabama's latest congressional map today, ruling that a new map needed to be drawn because Republican lawmakers had failed to comply with orders to create a second majority black district or something close to it. In a sharp rebuke, which is what I like to see, the judges ordered that the new map be independently drawn, which basically takes the responsibility away from the Republican-controlled legislature, while chastising state officials who, quote, ultimately did not even nurture the ambition to provide the required remedy, unquote. The legislature, you might have heard about this, they had hastily pushed through a revised map in July after a surprise Supreme Court ruling found that Alabama's existing map violated a landmark civil rights law by undercutting the power of the state's black voters. The revised map, approved over the objections of Democrats, increased the percentage of black voters in one of the state's six majority white congressional districts to about 40% from about 30%. So basically, they just didn't obey the ruling. They just said, no, we're not going to do that. The Supreme Court ruled something and they just ignored it. That's what Republicans do. In its new ruling, the three-judge panel in Alabama found that the legislature had flouted this mandate under the court's ruling. The law requires the creation of an additional district that affords black Alabamians, that's a word, Alabamians, like everyone else, a fair and reasonable opportunity to elect candidates of their choice. The 2023 plan plainly fails to do so. That's what the judges said. Now, responsibility for a new map is now falling to a special master, Richard Allen, and a cartographer, David Eli, based in California. Both were appointed by the court. So this decision, however, can be appealed. Let's hope this ends soon. The state officials have said a new congressional map needs to be in place by early next month in order to prepare for the 2024 elections. Eric Holder, remember him, former attorney general, head of the National Redistricting Foundation. What happened in Alabama this summer underscores the necessity for the judiciary to continue to be unwavering in its obligations to enforce the critical protections of the Voting Rights Act.
So they're going to be under observation, and they're getting experts to help with how this is done and going forward, right?
Well, I mean, Republicans no longer have the responsibility. It's going to be done by independent people who hopefully are independent.
As it should be, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, it's silly how partisan some of the machinations of just operational stuff, you know, the day-to-day for these parts of the government.
Mm-hmm. It's really important, though, because you disenfranchise the voting public, and that is how elections change. That's how results change. By all the gerrymandering, by all the unfairness.
It's super corrupt. I mean, this is why, I mean, it shouldn't be news. It shouldn't be something that we're policing because of bad actors, but that's the kind of politics that we're dealing with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have to do that.
It's a bad sign.
If people were not fighting or not challenging this, then it would have stood. It would have just happened. And virtually every black person in Alabama would have been disenfranchised in one way or another. Okay, let's move back down to Florida for the third time. A state judge struck down North Florida's congressional districts on Saturday, rebuffing Governor Ron DeSantis' open defiance of anti-gerrymandering protections, finding the governor's map illegally reduced black voters' electoral power. You seeing a trend here? It's happening everywhere. This is their tactic. It's not a coincidence. DeSantis had wagered the state's Fair Districts Amendment against the U.S. Constitution, arguing mandatory protections for black voters violated the Equal Protection Clause. I love how they twist language around. Second Judicial Court Judge J. Lee Marsh flatly rejected that gamble, rendering a decision that could reverberate from the halls of Tallahassee to the streets of Jacksonville, paving the way for a new Democratic district where Jacksonville's black voters have more influence. So, yeah, and that judge, by the way, was appointed to a seat by former Republican Governor Rick Scott. So, yeah, you know, you can say judges were appointed by certain people and assume that they're going to follow what that person believes in. Not always the case. Hopefully, frequently not the case.
Yeah, I mean, they're appointed to a position sometimes for a really long time, but to be independent. That's the point of their appointment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The judicial branch alone, according to the judge, has the power to declare what the law is, including whether the Florida Constitution provisions are themselves unconstitutional. All right, so this kind of thing is happening all over the place. But the tricks continue. You know, the Republicans are very good at playing the system. You've been following the whole Mitch McConnell story. It's sad to watch. It really is, to see somebody deteriorating like that, and it brings forth the possibility that he will be replaced in one way or another. He might have to resign. Now, the way it works, it's rather interesting. When a senator resigns, their replacement is appointed by the governor of their state, and that happens until a special election occurs. Now, you might not know this, but the governor of Kentucky, where Mitch McConnell is a senator, the governor of Kentucky is a Democrat. A Democrat. Imagine that, in Kentucky.
Oh, well, that says something. That maybe explains a little bit.
What does it explain?
Just that there might be a fear. What? Why is that funny?
Would you expect a Democratic governor in Kentucky? I don't. I'm surprised by it.
No, but it does happen in that. I mean, there are many states that you would describe one way, and their leadership in the local governance mm-hmm. is counterintuitive. That
yeah.
happens all the time.
No, Vermont has a Republican governor.
I'm not entirely surprised. So maybe the uninitiated might.
Mm-hmm.
So in any event, maybe the reluctance to resign is because of the power that the perceived power that governor may have in Mitch McConnell's eyes, who himself is a pretty savvy with strategy and so forth, mm-hmm. or at least fancies himself a tactician of sorts.
Well, I mean, think what it could mean, even if it's just for a few months, to have a Democratic a senator added to the Senate. You know, one more in the majority, it would make some things a lot easier to pass. I regret to say, though, Republicans are one step ahead as usual. Now, for decades in Kentucky, that power was reserved exclusively for the governor. However, when Governor Andy Beshear, a Democrat, was put in the state's highest office, Republican lawmakers used their legislative supermajorities to change the law. Yeah, they changed the laws. Under the new law, he no longer has that power. They have the power. They basically get to pick three choices. He can choose which one of the three, but that's it. He doesn't have the power. So every time you think the Democrats are going to have an advantage, the Republicans have already thought about it. You know, I'm sure none of them know how to play chess, but they would be good at it if they did. And this is just yet another example of it. It's not that big a deal because, you know, it would be a temporary appointment anyway, and it could actually backfire because if you appoint somebody who's liberal in a conservative state, that might mean that you don't get reelected as governor. But still, it just shows how Republicans play the long game, and that's something that Democrats aren't that good at, unfortunately.
I don't buy that. I mean, I don't buy that. You say that. As usual, Republicans are one step ahead. I mean, yeah, that sounds tough, but I don't think that that's always the case.
It's the case way too often. Look, Republicans are in the minority. If you look at voter registration, they are in the minority, yet they control so many states, and they control states with supermajorities, which means you can't override them. You know, the governor tried to override this in Kentucky, wasn't able to. Here in New York, all of Long Island basically is represented by Republicans now. How did that happen? There's more Democrats registered to vote than Republicans. It's because of gerrymandering. It's because of shenanigans. It's because they are playing the game, for right or for wrong, they're playing the game and winning. And Democrats need to do more. You know, if Republicans were in the state that Democrats were in right now, they would reshape the Supreme Court and add seats and fill them with Republicans. You know, if the shoe were on the other foot, they would do that. And the reason Democrats don't do that is because they're afraid Republicans will do that someday. Let alone that Democrats won't do it and Republicans will do it anyway. That is how they play the game. And we better wake up and see that, because it's getting to the point where we're getting used to minority rule in this country, where, you know, the vast majority of people don't want abortion restrictions. Yet here we are with abortion restrictions, and you have a Supreme Court that'll back it up. You have state legislatures that will enforce it, and the people don't want it. You have minorities who are disenfranchised, who basically don't get one person, one vote like other people do, and courts will back that up because judges are appointed by Republicans, judges who basically hold the party line. So it's a dirty business.
I think that telling people, I mean, what should we do then? Like, I think just give up.
No,
because
no,
it's so
fight.
Corrupt.
I'm
no, but we're always fighting, and it's always about what we're doing wrong with your smug prescription for how to citizen right. And I don't think it's fair. Like you say, they're playing the game. They're destroying the game. They're mm-hmm. corrupting it unendingly
right.
and miring it in lawyers and litigiousness mm-hmm. to completely end the functionality of our republic. And you're here telling us from the independence voice, because the independents are driving so much in this country right now. They're doing such a fantastic job. And you get to sit here and smugly tell people about what they're not doing wrong, so that yet again the crooks can come in and strong arm people that want to actually play by some semblance of rules.
I'm smug. You think I'm smug? Okay. Well, that's one way of looking at it. Listen, what's the alternative? You tell me another way to deal with this. If you don't fight, what happens? They're going to roll over you. They're going to get their way. It's like the whole Twitter argument all over again. You have to stay and fight. You can't just let this happen. And they are using the rules, they're using the laws to their advantage. They're stacking courts, they're stacking legislatures, And you can't get past that.
So you're telling me to give up.
No, I'm not telling you. I'm telling you the opposite of that.
But if you've been fighting that all along, and you're yet again here at this juncture, and you're telling me you have to fight, what is inspiring about that? What do you do?
Okay.
You're telling me that people are foully breaking the rules in the game, and you're supposed to fight and not play by the rules. I mean, what are you saying?
No,
are you saying we should fight? Are you saying we should continue playing by the rules while we get screwed?
I'm saying you should fight as they are fighting and outwit them at the game they are playing.
Oh, but they're always one step ahead, as you say. I mean, words are powerful, E.
Yeah. and they are. I have to point out when they're winning. I'm not saying that our side never wins. I never said that.
But it's the fetus.
Okay, well, you want me to just lie and say, yeah, we're doing great. Everything is working out just fine. And meanwhile, I'm looking at a Wall Street Journal poll that has Trump and Biden tied. He could actually win next year. We could actually be back in the situation we were in 4 years ago. You know, that's what happens if you ignore the facts. And if you don't admit that they are winning these battles because we weren't prepared. So I don't think it's defeatist. You know, any more than Zelensky telling people to fight the invasion is defeatist. Why isn't it over yet? Why aren't we winning? Because you're up against a formidable opponent, and you have to keep fighting. You have to just not give up, and you have to get more people to fight as well. Look, we're the majority. It's ridiculous. The Republicans have not won a popular vote for president since 2004, and that's the only time this century they have won the popular vote. Yet, how many years have they been in power? You know, things like that. Things like we need to change certain. They can change the rules when it suits them. How about we change this electoral college nonsense? We're loath to do that. We're loath to actually, you know, make an adjustment so that, you know, things don't always go their way. We could add more seats to the Supreme Court. Why didn't we do that when we had the opportunity? Because we're afraid of what they might do. But what I'm saying is they're going to do it no matter what we do. I'm sorry for saying the we and them, but let's face it, it is a we and them. I'm on a particular side, and I side with particular, you know, political views. And what I see happening, it gets me upset. I know it gets you upset as well.
I can't talk about it.
But we're both on the think about this. We're both on the same side, and we're having a conversation like this, which is good, I think. But imagine how it is dealing with people who see things completely differently. Can you make any progress there? And right now, in this country, I don't think you can. I think we're so divided that it's just not possible.
Yeah, I agree. I can't actually say what I think because I don't want to have to explain it. It's not a brilliant, bright, shiny place to
yeah,
be.
The thing is, and anger is totally acceptable here. I get it. You can't ever give up. No, never, ever give up. And never believe that you're alone. And never believe that when you're challenged, you're being attacked. I don't believe that for a second. And that is how you believe more, is when you stand up for your position. And we need to respect people who have slightly different views and ways of expressing themselves. Because, you know, in the end, I think more people get it right than get it wrong. It's just the people who get it wrong win so many times that the people who get it right feel like they can never win. And I'm saying you can, because the numbers are on our side. We just have to stop. I guess it is cheating, because while they are using the rules to their advantage, the thought behind it is not in the spirit that those rules were written. And that, to me, is sad. Obviously, when this country was founded, you know, slavery aside and all the other hypocrisies, the idea was that this be a democratically run nation where one vote counted for one person. I know there's all kinds of holes you can drive in that based on history, but that is what our country is supposed to represent. And either we give that up or we make sure that happens. So Let's pay attention, I guess. All right, I had more here. I actually had something good, and that was where Biden went down to Florida. Did you see this? He went down to Florida to visit the latest hurricane's victims, Idalia, this one. And DeSantis refused to show up. Now, this is something where he definitely lost, because Joe Biden basically showed up, and he expected to meet with DeSantis, because that's what you do. When you go to a disaster site, the governor of the state shows up, even if the president is from a different party. Not with this little child. No, he did not show up, made a big stink about it, saying, oh, security. They already had it worked out. They already had a place where Biden was going to be that wasn't going to affect the rescue and the rebuilding and all that. But he just did not show up. And Biden was there talking to people. And when asked if he had a message for DeSantis, he said, we're going to take care of Florida. He could not have looked better. He could not have looked better. And that was awesome. That's what a president does. Couldn't imagine Trump doing something like that without making it about him somehow. So there are countless stories. I mean, I've got George Santos here. You want George Santos? Another shining example of Republican hypocrisy. He's entered talks with federal prosecutors about possible paths forward in his fraud case, an indication that the parties may be considering a plea deal. Okay, here's a good example. If this were a Democrat, he would not be in his office anymore, because Democrats would drive him out, just like Democrats drove out Cuomo. Sometimes rightly so, sometimes wrongly so, but definitely they would have driven George Santos out if he were a Democrat. Republicans? No, because they see a political advantage to keeping him in his seat. And they don't care about the hypocrisy. They don't care how bad they look. They care about the numbers. And I sure don't admire that. Just pointing out, this is another way they win. And we have to fight that. In a letter filed today, prosecutors in the Eastern District of New York notified the judge that they intended this week to file a batch of new evidence against Mr. Santos, a Republican representing parts of Long Island and Queens. In their request to delay a court conference set for Thursday, prosecutors wrote that they anticipated making another substantial production of evidence this week and wanted to give Mr. Santos time to review the material. They added that the parties have continued to discuss possible paths forward in this matter, and would need additional time to continue those discussions. And, it's really pathetic that they have all these people being indicted and prosecuted for crimes. Criminal crimes. You know, not civil crimes. And, you know, it's this is what the Republican Party has become. And we can't stop saying that. The fact that Trump is having so many challenges right now, that is a victory. That's a victory for all of America that we need to constantly remind ourselves of. That, yeah, the system works. They'll say, oh, it's all part of some conspiracy, but the conspiracy gets more and more unhinged the more they keep talking. You know, okay, so the Justice Department is in on it. All the Democrats are in on it. The media is in on it. Dr. Fauci is in on it. It just gets more and more ridiculous the more you let them talk. And I'm all for that. But yeah, seeing Trump prosecuted is probably one of the proudest moments in our country, I think. Because it shows that somebody can basically abuse their power, think they're above the law, and be proven to be wrong. That's a good thing. So, be happy about that, Kyle.
It's the lower limits, though. It's not a they didn't teach you this when I was in school. Maybe they are now.
Oh, they will be teaching this.
I mean,
they will be teaching
U.S. this. U.S. history courses are going to be they must be insane.
Except in Florida, where DeSantis is going to make sure they don't talk about this.
Oh yeah, there are a bunch of Care Bears down there.
But it's the fight is happening on the highest levels and on the lowest levels as well. Elementary schools, kindergartens, people are. I was talking to you about this earlier in the week, where basically in Florida, you get disciplined if you bring up something gay in a class. Like, for instance, this person in history had a husband instead of a wife. You bring that up, you get in trouble. You're not supposed to mention that. That's not relevant. Well, what if we make sure that the opposite is also enforced, where if somebody mentions that this person in history had a wife, they also get disciplined. And if they refuse to do that, ask them why. Because eventually they will say, because gays aren't normal. You know, they'll say something hateful. They'll say something they can't take back. That's what we have to do, is push them to that point. Because, you know, just accepting it and saying, oh boy, Florida, they don't care. They don't care if we just write them off. You know, we have to stand up for ourselves. And I think we've done a fairly good job of that, but I know. We have to keep fighting. I know. You hate hearing that. I hate hearing it too.
Yeah, they're trying to be like little incubators, and they are in some ways, for like future politics, and much in the ways they criticize like the coasts for influencing Democratic politics, mm-hmm. and so forth. So it shouldn't be a surprise that these weird experiments get all this hype, and then we kind of tune it out because it's just from a place where all the mad political science is going on. But you're spot on. I think it's like truly ridiculous to have to confront, but it doesn't mean any. It's no less worthy of being confronted. I mean, it's a waste of time, but you have to kind of do it, like taking out the trash or whatever.
You know, it is a waste of time, but it also is the most important thing you can do. You know, because if you don't challenge even the slightest injustice, it becomes the norm. And you won't feel it, almost guaranteed you won't feel that you won by challenging something, but you are winning. That action is something that is so necessary, so important, because it leads to somebody else challenging. It leads to a chorus of voices. Eventually, it leads to victory. You got to play the long game. Remember, Republicans have been playing the game for, what, 50 years now to defeat Roe versus Wade, and they won. On that, temporarily, you know, because eventually they're going to feel the pain of that move. And it's part of the long game.
Wow, yeah. It's been a lot of years of a lot of patterns, and I think that they're familiar to me by now, and I'm in a place where I kind of don't want to play any of it, and I don't want to be around any people either,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to disrupt my ability to speak with you here, so I tend to self-censor, and I think that it's nuance. There's so many different ways to look at a lot of these things. So it's don't take my lack of commentary for not having something to say about a lot of
lack
this stuff.
I don't think you had a lack of commentary this hour, Kyle. I think you had a lot of commentary, and I welcome it.
Well,
I welcome being challenged. And
I have a certain persona here, but like I have a lot to say about these things, and to be measured in my words is difficult when you're going beyond the speed of sound.
I measure too. There's a lot I'm not saying that I want to say. If you want to hear me say it, come out to the entrance of Starnberg University by Nichols Road. I'll be speaking with a podium later tonight for about an hour. Shouting at the traffic going by. It's surprisingly therapeutic. Hey, we are out of time. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Please stay tuned to WUSB, and we'll see you next week. Good night.